Hi, everybody, and welcome to Packers Unscripted. Happy New Year to all of you out there. From Packers.com, I am Mike Spofford, and he is Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field to talk about the conclusion of the Packers 2017 season. It ends with a 35-11 loss at Ford Field in Detroit. And Wes, I know a lot of reports out there swirling around about possible changes going on within the organization. And let's just say that after the game, Mike McCarthy did not address anything about the future of what's going on with the coaching staff or anything else in the football operation. So it's not our place to discuss the speculation. We will wait until we hear from the head coach, which is going to be presumably within a couple of days, sometime later this week. We will hear from him on what is going on or not going on. So with that, the final game of the regular season, not the way the Packers wanted to go out, certainly 35-11, a rough ball game. Brett Hundley didn't finish his stint as the starting quarterback, certainly the way he wanted to. A couple of early turnovers really kind of blew the Packers' chance to make this a game and stay competitive in it.
Yeah, I think the thing that stands out the most when you really look at the stat sheet once this thing was over was the four turnovers, four takeaways for the Lions and zero for the Packers. I mean, that was going to tilt this ball game so significantly. Mike McCarthy said afterwards he actually was relatively happy with the way the Packers started this football game. They had made the decision earlier in the week that they were going to try to go for that surprise onside kick if they won the coin toss.
Yeah.
And there you go, Mason Crosby doing one of the things that he does best. Jermaine Whitehead makes a tremendous play on the ball to get the Packers the football at the 49-yard line. As they've done basically every single time Hundley's been under center, they drove on that first series. And then, you know, the pass a little bit behind Jamal Williams ends up being a drop, turns into an interception, and the Lions are able to get the ball there. But Packers actually end up forcing, I believe, the 3-and-out defensively. Green Bay gets the ball back, actually ends up kicking the field goal to go up 3-0. So things were kind of working in their favor, but slowly between the drops and the missed tackles and everything kind of culminating together, the game slowly got away from them.
Yeah, when you turn the ball over twice in the red zone with scoring opportunities there in the first quarter, in a game that you know you're playing uphill from the beginning.
Right.
You've got some starters on the field. I'm not saying this was an entire, you know, taxi squad type of lineup, but the Packers were using a lot of backups on both sides of the ball with some starters sprinkled in, and even some of those starters on the defensive side, I would say, were rotating in and out maybe more often than they would in a usual regular season game situation. So you turn the ball over twice in the red zone with a chance to score early in the ball game. The defense does start out pretty well. Even after giving up the one deep ball 50 plus yards over the top, they hold the Lions to a field goal there. But then the Lions' big plays kind of kicked in. They got the 54-yard touchdown to
right.
Kenny Golladay. Later on, they get a 71-yard touchdown pass to Golden Tate when he's wide open to the left side for Stafford against the zone defense. And the Packers offense, after those early promising drives, just never really got going until getting a fourth down touchdown pass late in the game to Randall Cobb that you know, gave you maybe some hope that the Packers could close the gap a little bit, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah, pretty much the same drill in this game, and it's been sort of the downfall of the Packers in the second half of the season. Offensively, got out to a relatively fast start. Slow down, have some three and outs, have some big three and outs where Hundley's taking a sack on third down, and that leads to some negative yardage as well. Ends up the field position battle, I think, weighed heavily, especially in that first half. Packers punting, Justin Vogel punting out of his own end zone two or three different times.
Yeah, and then you also have the mistake on the punt return where
right.
you end up muffing a punt because one of your blockers gets blocked into Trevor Davis, who's just trying to make a fair catch, and the Lions, you know, get the ball in easy scoring position. That's, you know, the game just started to snowball the wrong way.
Yeah, and that's a tough spot for Donatello Brown, too, because I guess I got to go back and look at the film. I don't remember him working as a jammer the last few games. That's, I think, another thing with all the injuries that happened. Josh Hawkins, as you said, ends up rotating with Devon House at cornerback. Lindsey Pipkins makes his first career start, the undrafted rookie cornerback out of Oklahoma State. So, yeah, it was. I think there were some guys that stepped up. I mean, you look at, the Manuel Birds of the world that sort of came out of nowhere to make a play. And even some of the vets. I thought Clay Matthews and Mike Daniels played really hard. But across the board, inconsistency and just not being able to take advantage of opportunities and having some unfortunate turnovers, I think ultimately just led to this game being out of sight for the Packers once we got to the fourth quarter.
Yeah, so as the final score reads, 35-11, the Packers finished the season at 7-9. As we talked about, obviously the eight season streak of going to the playoffs comes to an end. Just the second sub-500 record in Mike McCarthy's 12-year tenure. And what it ends up doing now at 7-9, the Packers, it looks like, will be picking 14th in the first round of the NFL draft. Just to explain a little bit, they tied with the Washington Redskins at 7-9 for what would be the 13th and 14th positions. Strength of schedule is the first tiebreaker, is actually dead even between right. the two. So they go a little deeper into the tiebreakers, and it actually comes down to a common games tiebreaker. You have to have a minimum of 4 common games with that opponent. And the Packers and the Redskins both played the Seahawks, the Vikings, the Saints, and the Cowboys. They both played 5 games against those 4 opponents because Washington played Dallas twice, the Packers played Minnesota twice. In those 5 games, the Packers went 2-3. The Redskins went 1-4, so because the Redskins were worse, they get the 13th spot, the Packers get the 14th spot. The upshot of all that explanation, Wes, is that the Packers have the highest draft pick they have had since 2009 when they drafted B.J. Raji at number 9 overall to be 14th. The highest draft pick the Packers have had since then was 21st when they drafted Ha Ha Clinton Dix in 2014. So uncharted waters, but a tremendous opportunity for this organization.
It is, and as you said, Mike, I mean, you look at 2009, that was the last time. That draft was the last time they were coming off a season in which they didn't go to the playoffs. So this is the silver lining, the consolation, if you want to call it that. You do have a chance now, whether it's going to be offense, defense, whatever they decide to do with it.
Yeah.
There is an opportunity, not only in that first round, but in those other rounds, too, picking a little bit earlier to try finding a difference maker. They did it with Ha Ha Clinton Dix in 2014, picking 21st, and I thought that had a big, really a push for that defense to really solidify that safety position.
Absolutely.
And we'll see what they can do with this one.
Yeah, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about that when we go to the combine in February and all that. But for now, we're going to toss it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, some big pieces of news we haven't had a chance to discuss yet because they occurred after our final show of the previous week, but before the Packers kicked off against the Detroit Lions in the season finale. And that is 2 key pieces to this Green Bay Packers offense signing contract extensions as they were in the final. Both players were in the final year of their rookie deals. And I'm talking about receiver Devontae Adams and center Corey Linsley. I think it was pretty obvious that these were the two biggest free agent priorities or pending free agent priorities for the Green Bay Packers. And really good news that they got both of these guys back into the fold without even approaching that March deadline of free agency.
Well, the nice thing is with getting the deals done with both Adams and Linsley, the way that works is you're able to basically prorate a portion of their signing bonus towards the 2017 cap. So that makes it a more palatable contract over the length of it. So, you know, you're able to spread that over 4 years instead of 3. That goes a long way with contracts at times. So very smart and savvy from the Packers from that perspective. But at the same time, it also rewards both Devontae Adams and Corey Linsley for kind of betting on themselves this year, playing this thing out, seeing what they can accomplish. Linsley had the offseason surgery on the ankle. He felt like that was going to be something that could clean up the lingering hamstring injuries, the leg injuries he'd been suffering. He ends up playing every offensive snap for the Packers this season. Then Devontae Adams, he had that big breakout year a year ago, but people were still kind of wondering, can he do it again? Not only did he do it, he did it with Brett Hundley at quarterback as well. He was able to establish that momentum, that rhythm and timing with Hundley as well. And I think when you just look at his physical gifts, Mike, the fact that he just turned 25 on Christmas Eve, this guy was going to be one of the top free agents, not only at the receiver position, but in the entire NFL. So for the Packers to get both of them locked up now, I think that says a lot about them in terms of the two prospects they developed from that 2014 draft and now their ability to kind of continue to grow within this offense.
Yeah, and I think what you said about Devontae Adams and what he did with Brett Hundley, if there were any questions about him, you know, building and repeating what he did in a breakout 2016, he did it with Brett Hundley at quarterback because at the end of the day, the Packers won three games with Hundley at quarterback against Chicago, Tampa Bay, and Cleveland, and Davante Adams had a pretty significant role in all of those victories. He really was Brett Hundley's go-to guy, and when the offense was clicking, when it was getting some things done with Brett Hundley at quarterback, a lot of it had to do with Davante Adams. You couldn't be happier for the guy. I mean, he did everything he had to do. Obviously, you hope everything with the concussion, the second concussion that he sustained in 2017, unfortunately, everything from there goes smoothly and he comes back with no issues. But we even saw on social media Aaron Rodgers awfully happy that there's no concern with Davante Adams going elsewhere.
Yeah, and Randall Cobb even talked about in the locker room after the game on Sunday night. I mean, here's a guy who came into Green Bay, I think had pretty big expectations because of that history, the legacy they've had of second-round draft picks in Green Bay, really becoming Pro Bowl-type receivers, difference-making type receivers. In Adams, he had to take the long, hard road. I mean, the first year, he kind of broke out a little bit, stepped in that number three spot, was a good complementary piece for that offense. The second year, a lot more was going to be asked him without Jordy Nelson. He ends up injuring his ankle in the first week of the second week of the season. It lingers the entire season. Wasn't the same player.
Right.
He had so many doubters, so many questions. You know, so many questions were being asked about him going into that third year, and then you really started to see what he can do. He's ever so confident in his abilities. So I think that went a long way. And then just to touch on really quickly, Mike, when you look at Corey Linsley, I think this says a lot about Linsley because this is the first time the Packers have really extended and given a second contract to a center since, I believe, Scott Wells.
I was going to say Scott Wells, I think, was the last
one. Going into the late 2000s. So for them to feel like Lindsley's the guy there, I think it fills a huge need because there wasn't an heir apparent, obviously, there. I mean, they were going to have to make a big move there if Lindsley didn't come back.
Right, so absolutely.
Now you bring him back. You have Lane Taylor extended earlier this season. You have to see where things are at with Brian Bulaga, you know, if Jari Evans wants to come back or not, or what the plan will be there at the right side. But as far as having those three pieces together with Bakhtiari, Taylor, and Lindsley for at least the next three seasons, a very, very big thing for Aaron Rodgers now going forward.
Yeah, there's a foundation there certainly on the offensive line. There are some questions both injury-wise and with Jari Evans and his decision about his future, exactly what the right side is going to look like in 2018. And with regards to the receiving core, I know a lot of people are wondering with Jordy Nelson's contract, Randall Cobb's contract, and now Davante Adams getting his new deal. How is this all going to work out? Is somebody going to be the odd man out? I don't know how this is going to work out. I will just say this. The fact that the Packers, going back to your original point, that they signed both Lindsley and Adams before the season ended, it changes, and we'll see how things come out in terms of the numbers, but it certainly changes what the cap number for both of those guys is in 2018.
Right.
So what I think it does, however this shakes out, is it gives you more flexibility with what you want to do in some of these other financial contract situations than you would have had if both of these guys take it all the way up to March, and then you don't have that option of counting some of that signing bonus and some of that money against the 2017 cap.
And keep in mind, too, because this has become a big narrative, and I just want to dispel one notion. Let's say I get paid $1 million for 4 years to write and report for Packers.com.
Boy, that'd be nice.
It would be nice. I don't, a lot of times with NFL contracts, it isn't just $250,000, $250,000, $250,000, $250,000. The way that these contracts go, just because it's X amount of dollars, you just don't divide it by how many years it is and say, okay, that's the cap number. It's a lot more complicated than that. And I think one thing people are not thinking enough about is the fact that the first year of an NFL contract, a second contract, typically, it's not a huge cap hit. It's more towards the end of it. So another thing to keep in mind when you start trying to become micromanaging and doing all these couch GM decisions.
Right. It's not necessarily a huge cap hit because they're getting all the money in the signing bonus.
Right.
And then they're getting a lower salary in that first year of the deal. But then the signing bonus is prorated over the life of the contract in terms of the salary cap. So it is, you know, it is a numbers game, and the Packers are playing it.
And the cap keeps going up, too. That's another thing to consider as well.
It absolutely does. With that, we'll toss it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Well, Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford right here. Wes Hodkowitz all the way over there. And Wes, I got to tell you, we need to talk about this. The way this last playoff spot in the AFC was decided in Week 17, there wasn't a lot of playoff drama in Week 17 compared to maybe some other years we've seen in the past. But the way this AFC thing went down with the Baltimore Ravens, all they had to do was stop 4th and 12 from the 49-yard line in the last minute of the game at home against the Cincinnati Bengals to go to the playoffs. They blow it. Not only do they allow the 4th and 12, they allow a 49-yard touchdown pass. Baltimore hands its playoff spot to the Buffalo Bills, and thanks to 4th and 12 from the 49 by the Cincinnati Bengals, the Buffalo Bills are in the playoffs for the first time since 1999. This is one of the crazier – the league is crazy. I get that, and I talk about it all the time. This is one of the crazier ones I think I've come across.
I couldn't make heads or tails of any of this, to be honest with you. I think I'm still kind of struggling with it. So here's what happens. You and I get done covering the game. I was still writing my notes. So I was kind of like in tunnel vision until probably I'd say like 8 p.m. Central time.
Yeah.
On Sunday night.
Similar to me.
Finally have a chance to sit back. And you were obviously working on Insider Inbox, but I finally had a chance to sit back and start watching what happened. And the first clip I see is of Micah Hyde and the Buffalo Bills in their locker room watching the monitor in their locker room after they got their stuff taken care of. And that play unfold. It is amazing, I think, for that franchise to be able to accomplish that this season. Let's be honest. These are the storylines that I think make the game the most compelling.
Yeah.
And for the Bills, through all the ups and downs this year, and there certainly were a lot of them for them. I mean, there's the issue, almost a disaster, with the quarterback situation midseason. Their defense fluctuated. They bring in Kelvin Benjamin. So many different variables to it. For them to be able to get in the playoffs, I think, especially in an uneven year like this where there are really only two bona fide like front runners in that conference, you have to feel great for them.
Yeah, what a day for the city of Buffalo, really. I mean, when you're looking at the clips of the fans at the sports bars watching
the end of the
Cincinnati Baltimore game, and their franchise is in the playoffs for the first time this century, it's one of those days, regardless, Wes, of what happens in the playoffs. They have a tough matchup, obviously, going down to Jacksonville in the wild card round, all of that. It's a game they certainly can win.
Yeah.
But regardless of what happens in the playoffs for the Buffalo Bills, those fans of that team are going to remember New Year's Eve 2017 for a long time.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this too, Mike. If I'm the Bills, I want to play Jacksonville right now.
Yeah.
Jacksonville has a lot of questions to answer.
They're limping into the playoffs. Two straight losses. Their offense hasn't done much at all. The defense going through some ups and downs. You know, losing that game to Tennessee. Tennessee had a playoff spot on the line, had to beat a playoff team in order to get it. And they did it. So as much of the ups and downs also for the Tennessee Titans, hats off to them for getting
in. Yeah, like you and I predicted at the beginning of the season, Buffalo and Tennessee were the natural wild card. They were the favorites for this
We
thing,
saw it
right?
coming from a mile away.
But I think it goes back to what you and I said before, and I don't want to turn this into the, we're going to rip on Blake Bortles here for 2.5 minutes, but when you have inconsistent quarterback play, it doesn't matter how good your defense is. It doesn't matter how good your perimeter weapons are. You have to be able to protect the football. Bortles hasn't done it in the last two games, and it's really come back to hurt the Jaguars. In credit to Marcus Mariota, he did what he had to do. Their running game did what it had to do, although I'm sure Derrick Henry isn't going to be talking to his relatives about his 28-carry, 51-yard performance. You did what you had to do to be able to get into the playoffs, and Dick LeBeau, that defense, they're going to make one more run at this thing.
They're going to give it another shot. All right. Before we go to a break, though, Wes, picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. Wes, quickly before we go, let's touch on where things are in the NFC playoff picture. Week 17, basically nothing changed in essence. The Atlanta Falcons beat the Carolina Panthers to get the sixth and final spot ahead of the Seattle Seahawks. All the positioning, everybody else 1 through 5, nothing really changed. I know you and I have both mentioned in Insider Inbox and in other settings, we're both kind of high on the New Orleans Saints and their opportunity to get back to the Super Bowl. They lost to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Week 17, not necessarily a whole lot at stake for them in the grand scheme of things, but does that loss change your feeling at all about New Orleans?
I don't think so, although that I don't know if you saw that post-game handshake between Dirk Cutter and Sean Payton.
No, I missed that.
Yeah, it was strange. I'll just say that it was very physical. Let's just put it that way. But I really don't. Certainly, I don't think they were pulling very many punches. Drew Brees played in this game. They had Kamara and Ingram out there. But I just think when it really boils down to it, the potential is really there for them to be able to get on a run here. I'll be honest with you, Mike. As far as the NFC is concerned, any of these six teams, realistically, I think have a shot at this deal.
I agree with you. I was just talking with our producer, Marvin, before we turned on the cameras here, that in the AFC, I have a hard time seeing anything aside from New England and Pittsburgh as the AFC championship game. Yeah. In the NFC, I'm with you. I could see any one of these six teams representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. Somebody's going to get hot. Maybe even a couple teams get hot, and we end up with an NFC championship game for the ages from this field. I can see any one of these half dozen making it all the way.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, like, the Cowboys beat the Eagles 6-0. I mean, it was just such a strange weekend with how this game played out. They need to be better from Nick Foles. I mean, he's going to have to be a guy that leads them to where they need to go because, again, a defense that can get them there. Minnesota, I think, ended up leading all three major defensive categories this season. So certainly, you know, the blueprint is there for them as well. I'm really curious to see that NFC South. Whether it's Carolina, whether it's Atlanta, if they can get on a run. I think there's some really dynamic offenses there, and I think they have defenses that can get it done. It's going to be exciting to watch.
Yeah, Atlanta gets a chance to defend its NFC title, and the winner of that Carolina-New Orleans game could be a team to watch out for. But with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com and on Twitter. You can still find him at Wes Hodd. I am at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. See you next time.